Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, December 13th, 2019. President Kiir and Riek Machar meet again, but the number of states and boundaries is still up in the air.
All of these reports were presented to these leaders, and they listened keenly and then made their remarks, giving advice and concerns about the status of implementation and the speed with which things are being implemented.
And the U.S. gets tough on visa restrictions for certain South Sudanese.
This shows that the U.S. is still having a concern and having a concern to put an end to the suffering of people of South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan principles to the revitalized peace agreement have pressured committees implementing that peace deal to ramp up their efforts to finish the remaining tasks before the February deadline to form a unity government. Officials who attended a meeting on security today say President Salva Kiir and his former deputy, Riek Machar, agreed that the committees should commit more time to implementing the activities that are holding back formation of the transitional unity government. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Today's meeting between the president and Machara focused on examining progress met by the various security committees of the pre-transitional committee working to implement security arrangements, a key component of the peace deal. South Sudan Minister of Cabinet Affairs Martin Elia Lomuro told the journalists after the meeting that Kiir and Machar wanted to know more about the challenges in carrying out the remaining tasks before the 100-day extension for completing those tasks expires.
All of these reports were presented to these leaders, and they listened keenly and then made their remarks, giving advice and concerns about the status of implementation and the speed with which things are being implemented. There is consensus that there is delay, but these mechanisms have committed themselves to speed up.
Lomuro says committees working on the security arrangements, which include the Joint Transitional Security Mechanism, the Joint Military Ceasefire Commission, the Joint Defense Board, and the Disarmament Demobilization and Rehabilitation Commission all submitted progress reports on the status of implementing the security arrangements.
There is the issue of supplies, which have also been agreement reached that food, medicine, and fuel need to be purchased quickly in order for these mechanisms to be able to do their job. We believe that the meeting was very courteous and there was harmony and understanding. As South Sudanese committed to ensure that this peace is implemented.
This is Machar's second meeting with the president this week since arriving in Juba on Tuesday. General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, the deputy president of the Sudan Military Transitional Council, also attended today's meeting as a representative of Sudan, one of the guarantors to the revitalized peace agreement. Poth Kang, a Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition official on the National Pre-Transitional Committee, says the two principals urged members of the security committees to fast-track the remaining tasks.
The two leaders, plus one of the grantors that were mentioned to you earlier, General Initi, will have a meeting to also chart the way forward and direct the rest of us as to how we will approach the remaining 70 days. As you all know, 31 days has gone.
Lomuro and Kang say the two principals did not discuss perhaps the most contentious issue, the number of states and their boundaries.
We all know there are situations here and there that has to be overcome. And I believe by working together, discussing and meeting, we will be able to overcome those challenges.
The SPLMIO has threatened not to take a part in the unity government if the remaining tasks are not completed during the next 70 days. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The U.S. State Department has issued visa restrictions on what it calls South Sudanese peace boilers in a bid to pressure the Kiir administration and other parties into fully implementing the revitalized peace agreement. One analyst in Juba says while the U.S. move is a positive one, its impact will benefit only be felt if the U.S. government convinces its allies to issue similar visa restrictions. Dima Silva Aurelio has more on that story for VOA from Juba.
In a statement issued Thursday, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the visa restrictions will apply to individuals who have directly or indirectly impeded peace, including those who are responsible for violating the ceasefire or cessation of hostilities agreement and U.S. arms embargo. The restrictions also target individuals engaging in corruption that fuels the conflict, suppressing freedom of expression and other abuses. In the statement, Pompeo says the visa restrictions could also include immediate family members of individuals impeding the peace process. Abraham Kuol Nyon is an associate professor of political science at the University of Juba. He says the U.S. move is timely.
This shows that the U.S. is still having a concern and having a concern to put an end to the suffering of people of South Sudan. But on other hand, this order may mean nothing to the people who are concerned, because most of them who are not American citizens and who don't have a lot of interest to travel to America may have no great impact on them.
Nyon says the visa travel restrictions should include other countries, so the restrictions have direct impact on the peace spoilers and their families.
If that order is trying to have a broader kind of effect, that means it will also involve the allies to U.S., then its effectiveness will be very great. And this one will only not be something that is going to stop the spoilers from continuing, but it will even motivate, it will even discourage the current people who are not signatories to the peace agreement, especially people like Thomas Cirillo, people like Paul Malong.
South Sudan's government spokesman Michael Makwe says this latest restriction directly targets South Sudanese government officials and indicates that America is not interested in seeing a peaceful South Sudan.
We don't see any reason for the American government, if they are really working for peace in South Sudan, and if they want peace for South Sudan, there is no reason for them every time when we are making a progress, they come out with something to dilute whatever progress is being made.
Makwe says Pompeo's announcement is a sign that the Trump administration does not support the implementation of the peace deal, but says the visa restrictions will not have a great impact on most South Sudanese.
Well, of course, that is the position of the American government. They are free to decide on whatever to do. But for us here, we are not even interested in traveling. So we are here to stay.
The visa restrictions come hours as Kiir and Machar were expected to hold meetings today, which they did to evaluate the progress made on security arrangements, a key provision in the peace deal. The two leaders held a closed-door meeting Tuesday, but did not disclose what was discussed in that meeting. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
At least four people are dead and several others wounded after 3 days of violent clashes this week between South Sudanese refugees and members of a host community in northern Uganda. The refugees and members of that host community have traded accusations about who started the fighting. Munyang David Mayar has the story for VOA from Juba.
The chairman of the Nyumazi refugee settlement, Nyang Aluel, says the fighting erupted after a resident of the host community came across another resident lying face down in a marketplace near the settlement on Tuesday morning.
So immediately he went to the neighborhood and began calling people to come and identify the body and find out whether the person is alive or dead. So it was discovered that the person was dead. And district police was called to intervene. After the arrival of the police, they collected the body. They were taken together with the dead body to the district headquarters. In reaction to the incident, the national mobilized themselves at night and began patrolling the market. Now the situation changed from there, and settlement came to a certain level of violence where we could not control.
Uganda's Minister for Internal Affairs, Obiga Kania, says the cause of the fighting could be long simmering resentments held by host community members against the South Sudanese refugees.
The local community feels that what is being done for the refugees is what they are not gaining from, although they have offered hospitality in terms of land and settlement areas. And the refugees, on the other hand, many times feel that it's their right, and they, since they already been hospitalized over there under the UN, they should probably do what they do, what they want to do.
Fighting continued for the last 3 days at Nyumazi camp, with several rounds of attacks and counterattacks by the two groups. Nyang says 4 people were killed in the latest round of fighting.
At the resumption of fighting yesterday, we lost two refugees of South Sudan nationals. I mean, South Sudanese. Then also lost 2 from the side of the Ugandan nationals. Currently, we have about 12 those who are injured.
Nyang says some of those who took part in the fighting were severely wounded and have been rushed to Kampala for treatment. He says many people are nursing wounds from arrows, pangas, and sticks. The camp chairman says local police did very little to contain the situation, but camp returned to the settlement after the Uganda People's Defence Forces arrived on the scene yesterday afternoon.
This morning we slept well and the situation is calm. As I'm speaking, we have opened up the market and the market has resumed to normal businesses. All the business people on the two sides have come back to their shops and they are operating now. And people at the settlement have come back to their homes, their houses, and they are settled. And we are still coordinating with other services, with partners, so that they come. And we are hopeful nothing will backfire again.
This is not the first time the South Sudanese refugees have clashed with host communities in Uganda. In 2018, refugees fought with host community residents in the Ailo and Bidibidi settlements. Some of the refugees affected by the repeated clashes between the two groups are asking the South Sudan government to return them to home country. Santo Malualachek, who lives in the Nyumazi refugee settlement, says he escaped violence in South Sudan only to find another conflict in the refugee camps.
We came here to hide in Uganda, where there is no sound of gunshot. We didn't come here to die, so I asked the government of South Sudan to take us back to settle in our communities. There is nothing much we can do here. There is peace now at home. I want our leaders, Kir Mayar and Riek Machar, to respect the peace agreement so that we can come back home.
About 1 million South Sudanese have taken refuge in different parts of northern and central Uganda after the conflict in 2013 and 2017 forced them to leave South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees and the Swedish Development Agency have launched a $5 million four-year program to promote access to financial and non-financial services to some 100,000 refugees living in Uganda. Halithma Athumani has more for VOA from Kampala.
$5 million is what will be available to 100,000 refugees in Uganda for a period of 4 years. With pilot projects operating in refugee settlements in northern Uganda, the financial services are geared to help refugees start, build, and expand enterprises to meet their daily needs and be more self-reliant. The Swedish head of development cooperation, Ola Holgren, notes that the program provides incentives for private financial institutions to invest in a target group in which they have previously been reluctant to invest.
There is a lot of unused entrepreneurial capacity that will be realized through this program. By giving refugees access to credit for business activities, supporting startups, facilitating employment, in short, to invest in their own futures.
Uganda is home to 1.3 million refugees, the majority of them from South Sudan and other neighboring countries such as Somalia, Burundi, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Kenya and Rwanda. UNHCR Deputy Representative Marwa Parums reiterated the UN Refugee Agency's commitment to continue to advocate with donors and partners to support refugees. She notes, however, that many financial institutions are still reluctant to lend to refugees because they see them as unstable.
And the fact that we have this program whereby an institution will believe them, will give them the trust that they've lost, and also with the money, they will be able to have a dignified life because they can run their own little business, and they will not be able to always ask to be given food.
The project will be implemented by financial institutions, including the Uganda Agency for Development Microfinance. Hannington Thenge, the agency's business growth and development manager, says the refugees should not misunderstand the project, thinking it is free money.
They are expected to appreciate that it's a business, so they have to go through the typical credit requirements. And we are going to enable them to learn all this through business scaling. Those who are business, well, they will be supported. They will be expected to pay back. So this is sustainable.
80% of refugees in Uganda are women, and in this access to financial services, 70% of the benefits of the program are expected to go to women in farming, handicrafts, catering, and trading. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A Sudanese education official says the country's pupils need an entirely new curriculum. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the funniest thing to ever happen to you?
I was thinking I can cross a gutter. Unfortunately, I found myself in the gutter and everybody was laughing.
The funniest thing to ever happen to me was when I fell down in the marketplace and people were laughing. It became funny to me because I just slipped.
A lot has happened to me, but what I remember, being with my family, discussing, they get to tell me funny stories that make me happy.
The funniest thing that has ever happened to me is moving from the house, picking a vehicle, realizing I don't have money on me. How embarrassing to realize there's nothing on me, just moving out like that.
Try to like ask somebody for money and I tried to like fix something and it didn't work. Well, I was ashamed.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011. And you're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The newly appointed head of curriculum in Sudan's education department has criticized the curriculum in Sudanese schools, saying the same curriculum has been in place for decades now. Omar Ahmed Garai says the existing curriculum has been designed to educate all students in the Sudanese Islamic religion, which excludes non-Muslims. Michael Atit has the details for us from Khartoum.
Garai accused the National Congress Party of the ousted President Omar al-Bashir of weakening the Sudanese national curriculum by Islamizing all the syllabus of the educational system in the country. Speaking in Arabic, Garai says the curriculum has excluded Sudanese non-Muslims who have been forced to study Islam against their will. He says nearly three Sudanese generations did not get proper education and their human rights have been violated.
The quantity of subject that is taught to a child is big and it is set for memorizing only while you cannot force everybody to memorize all the subjects. That is why most of the time pupils are punished in schools, like flogging, beating, insult and humiliation. These punishments violate human dignity.
Garai says The current curriculum was set based on the Quranic teaching, which require memorizing all subjects instead of teaching pupils to understand the subjects. He says this education system should be changed.
The problem of the curriculum is that it teaches pupils to memorize instead of using their imagination. So if a pupil has memory but doesn't use imagination, definitely will lead to stupidity. You cannot set a syllabus that only allow pupils to memorize all subjects. Not all the subjects are meant for memorization.
Garai says he plans to introduce new curriculum next year for both primary and secondary schools across the country. He says the new syllabus should reflect the diversity within the Sudanese communities and help pupils to love their country.
We want to include Sudanese values such as courage, sacrifice, cooperation, and forgiveness, which was seen during the sit-in. These values should be included in our national educational curriculum. These are the values we should teach our kids and raise with the next generation and build their future country.
He says the new national curriculum also should reflect values of human rights, justice, and respect for all Sudanese, including women and children. He says he believes the current educational system has suppressed women and non-Muslims minorities in the country, adding the Sudanese minority groups should also benefit from the country's education system.
A curriculum should reflect social justice and rule of law. It should raise peaceful coexistence values among citizens. It should reflect equality among people despite their differences. It should reflect equality between men and women and protect women and child rights.
Garai says, with a new political development in Sudan, the Ministry of Education would want to introduce the 6-3-3 system instead of the current 8-3 system. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
It's December, and Zimbabwe recently got its first heavy rains. Although delayed, they signaled the beginning of another farming season. But farmers are facing other problems that could hurt next year's crops. Reporter Kudzai Svinavashi has the details.
Maive Pijiti is the vice president of the Zimbabwe Commercial Farmers Union. She says, despite the rains, this farming season had a problematic start.
When the season started, it was a little bit difficult because people didn't get their money. Like when they sold their tobacco, some of them, they buy their input after selling their tobacco. But it was a little bit difficult for them to plan because they didn't know what was going to happen.
She says the government's ban on the use of US dollars meant some tobacco farmers were paid the US dollar value of their harvest in the local currency. But the exchange rate has changed dramatically since then. So the money they earned is worth less. And she says companies selling farming supplies such as seed and fertilizer are using black market exchange rates.
The companies who are selling their input, they are rating it mostly it's on the black market rate, which is around 20-something. For example, you can get fertilizer. They charge you about $400, $500, $600 on a bag of fertilizer. But that's too much. It's too expensive.
Government has a program to subsidize inputs and support farmers. But GT says that program known as Command Agriculture ties up farmers for days with banking and bureaucracy.
And then they introduce the command which is supposed to, you have to go through the bank. It's a long process which takes a lot of time. And farmers go to the bank several days without any success. And then by the end of the day, when they are lucky, most of them, they've managed to get the seed. But fertilizer, chemicals, they haven't got.
GT says farmers this year have had to plant late without any fertilizer, which will mean far smaller harvests. GT says it's not clear if farmers will make any profit on their next crop. She says fuel prices have also made it expensive to be in the farming business. And given climate change, She says there is extra uncertainty about whether the rains will last the full season or not. Zimbabwe's farms once not only fed its own people, they produced vast amounts of export foods, but years of mismanagement, soaring inflation, and shortages of fuel, fertilizer, and currency have sharply reduced the harvests. Last month, the United Nations said the country faces man-made starvation. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashe from Harare.
The World Health Organization warns that gains made in tackling the Ebola epidemic in the neighboring Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo are being threatened by ongoing insecurity in the region. As of December 10th, WHO reports that 3,340 cases of Ebola have been reported, including 2,210 deaths. This represents an overall case fatality rate of 66%. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Over the last week, 27 new confirmed cases of Ebola were reported from four health zones in North Kivu and Ituri provinces. The World Health Organization notes this is a substantial increase over the weekly average of seven new cases recorded during the previous 3 weeks. Michelle Yao heads the WHO's on-the-ground operations for the Ebola outbreak. He blames the rise in Ebola cases on attacks by armed groups, which are preventing healthcare workers from reaching vulnerable communities.
This is due to the fact that when we cannot access the community, we cannot perform surveillance activities, including vaccination. That has been one of the key innovations that help us really to stop the spread out of this country toward the others.
Human Rights Watch and the WHO say more than 100 armed groups are fighting in North Kivu and Ituri provinces. Some have attacked Ebola treatment facilities. Since the beginning of the year, eight healthcare workers, including one WHO staff member, have been killed. Because of heightened insecurity, WHO relocated 49 non-essential staff from the Ebola-hit region late last month. When the Ebola outbreak was declared on August 1, 2018, this deadly virus was circulating in 29 health zones, averaging more than 120 new cases of the disease every week. Yao says significant progress in tackling the disease has been made since then. He tells VOA that in the last few weeks, Ebola cases have been reported in only four health zones, Mabalako, Mandima, Beni, and Ocha.
This is actually where we need to ensure access to finish the job. And unfortunately, it's in this area where we are facing insecurity. This area is a mainly rural area. So the big cities, the outbreak is more or less controlled. So we remain with this rural area, but difficult to reach for security reasons.
Yao says he is confident of bringing the outbreak under control if safe access to this area can be ensured. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That is our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song No More War by Ross Corby.
Just checking up the global scene all over the world right now, seeing Rasta City. We need a global love, you know, and a global solution, and must be a conclusion. Sure, Rastafari, to stop the war. No more war in Africa, the people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in the Middle East, the people are fighting the peace. No more war in America, the people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in Asia, we gotta keep it nice and neat, y'all. Our people suffering around the world today, they're trying to find a solution. We look around and nowhere to hide, not even a single place to run. How can you say you're leading the world? That love. So how can you say you're leading the world without peace? Circumstances meet people along the way. They
They need someone to turn to. Only Jah has the solution. No mankind has it on its own. We were created.
We've been listening to Ross Corby with the song No More War. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for joining us. Have a great evening, everybody, and a great weekend. And tune in again on Monday evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
No more war in Africa. The people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in the Middle East. The people are fighting.